McKenna and Carol on K104. It's Happy Hour.
Welcome to Happy Hour with lawyer and TV personality Jonna Spilbor and author and inspirational speaker Carol Pesci. Happy Hour comes your way every Sunday morning at this time with life advice, real conversations, and awesome interviews with self-help heavy hitters, best-selling authors, celebrities, and more. Would you like to maybe live better, stress less, and laugh more? Then you've come to the right place.
And good morning, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Happy Hour here on K104 with Jonna Spilbor and Carol Pesci. I am Frankenberry, and good morning to you, and good morning, ladies.
Hey.
Hey.
Let me do my imitation of Carol saying hey, because my imitation of Carol saying hey is better than Carol actually saying hey. Like, I do her better than she does herself. Okay, are you guys ready? Okay, right.
Sure.
Just you be the judge. So, okay, blah blah blah. Welcome to Happy Hour. How are you girls doing today? Now, this is me imitating Carol. Ready? Hey.
Nailed
it.
Yes,
I have to admit, you did nail that.
Yeah, you did. You did. You did.
Yeah, when you're good, you're good.
You know what John is doing right now, Carol? She's blowing on her nails. You know what?
Again.
I am good. I am good, good, good.
Again.
I am.
So
it's been a minute, right? Because we had a couple of little guest reschedules. And so we're back. The band is back together now.
Indeed.
That's good.
Indeed.
Yeah.
And I got to tell you, I've been sitting on something that I've been dying to tell you guys for like 2 weeks. Well, it's not like anything good. It's just something that happened, which I'm going to classify as the most epic wardrobe malfunctions ever in the history of wardrobe malfunctions.
That's right. Now, I remember you texted me and you said it's currently happening and you wouldn't tell me. I'm like, you're going to make me wait.
Yes.
Oh, wait, let me get comfortable. Hang on.
Okay, so let me just clarify before you go any further that this is more epic than the guy whose butt was at your eye level with that little tiny string attaching the flaps of his jacket.
That is amateur, amateur compared to what I'm going to tell you.
Wait. Let's not forget your wrap dress flying open on Fifth Avenue as you got out of the cab.
Minor. I give that one a 4 on a scale of 1 to 10. Yeah, I'm serious.
Wait. No, yeah. I got it.
Yeah.
Wearing your dress inside out and backwards in court.
Now that one's up there. I'll give you that. That one is up
there. Yeah, that
there.
One's up there. That's a good one to be up there, yeah.
But I think this one may even top that one.
Oh, God, I'm ready.
Because it's just so bizarre. All right, you guys.
You're ready? It feels like Christmas morning, doesn't it?
It does. It's so exciting.
It's so funny. Like, I'm building this up. I'm going to get done telling you, and then I'm going to hear, like, crickets.
That's it?
Yeah, that exactly. It's going to be like what I just mentioned earlier when you tried to build up that whole little tiny string holding the flaps together on the back of a jacket, and I was like, what?
And?
And? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, big deal.
Well, let me see if I can do it justice. Okay. It was a dark and stormy night. No, I'm all kidding.
God.
But this is a God's honest, true story, every detail of it. And I did text Carol when it was happening because it was just so bizarre. And I was frozen with a little bit of fear. Okay. All right. So here's the deal. I don't even know how to... like maybe something supernatural happened. Okay, here's the thing. I went to get my nails done, which is not at all unusual. That's not the funny part of this story. And as many women and some men know, when you are getting a pedicure, for example, you sit in this big chair and the big chair can massage you if you press whatever buttons you want to press. And sometimes the massages are, they almost feel like professional. Like they could be really hard or they could be really soft. Or sometimes chairs don't work. But so I was in a chair doing what I do best, getting massaged and having my toes painted. Okay. You with me, you guys? You with me?
With you.
I thought what you do best is ride around in the back of a car, somebody driving you and drinking alcohol. I thought that was what you were good at.
That's up there. That is definitely up there.
Yeah, that's a skill.
So now, because this is a very casual setting, I might add, I am dressed casually. I am wearing kind of a thinnish t-shirt, and you know, I don't know what kind of what I had on the bottom, but that part's not important to the story. So I'm in there for a while. And the way it works is you get your pedicure done. Usually how it works, ladies can relate. You get your pedicure done first and then you walk over and you get your manicure done after that while your tootsies are drying. Okay. It makes perfect sense to me. So I finished the pedicure portion of the program and I'm sitting at the manicure table. Now I'm sitting up, you know, 6 inches from the person who's doing my nails. And I feel like I suddenly lost weight was the only way I could describe it. It was like, wait a minute. All of a sudden, my bra felt like it was big, right? And that it wasn't touching my skin. Did I just lose weight getting a pedicure? Did I just drop a couple pounds and now I'm feeling... And so I'm trying to figure out in my head, well, my hands are occupied now because I'm directly across from the person who's doing my nails. And I'm trying to like wiggle around nonchalantly to figure out why my bra suddenly does not fit anymore. Oh. So I said, this is really unusual. So I'm wiggling around and I'm wiggling around and I'm wiggling right out of my... Bra. Why did that happen, folks? I'll tell you why that happened. Well, I was getting my pedicure. The damn massage chair unhooked my bra.
And now your hands are occupied with wet polish and you can't do a darn thing about it.
My hands are occupied. My bra is flapping in the breeze under this thin t-shirt. And I have no way to kind of fix this problem that I now know has occurred. So I'm dying. So I do manage to elbow a text to Curly. And I'm like, you're not going to be helping right now.
The first thing that goes through your mind in this crisis
is to text you. And so now I know I'm freaking out because there are people in this salon. And part of the program is I'm going to have to get up and go wash my hands. Because they always say, go wash your hands after they put like a lot of oil on it. And I can't walk clear across this place with my bra flapping in the breeze and my boobs, you know, doing whatever boobs do. Right? So I'm like, this can't happen. I have to fake a heart attack. I have to fake an illness. I've got to do something to MacGyver my way out of this bizarre situation. So after I text Curly, I'm just racking my brain. How do I fix it? How do I fix it before I embarrass myself even further? Luckily, the phone rings and my girl gets up to answer it. And I took that moment, wet nails and all, and I reached behind me and I just nonchalantly tried to reconnect my bra behind my back in a room full of women. And I managed to get one hook on.
That's precarious. That's risky.
It was very precarious. And but here's the thing that I couldn't figure out. Like, I think I pulled it off, but I don't know how a massage chair was able to emulate like a boyfriend back in college who could one-handedly unsnap a bra without me even knowing it.
You see, that's what I was going to say. I was going to say, if you're going to personify the massage chair, at least you know it's a dude.
Isn't that nuts? I don't think that has ever happened in the history of history of histories. How did that possibly happen?
That's awesome.
It's awesome and weird.
you must not have had a good morning hook on that baby to start with, so.
Well, see, here's my question, though, Jonna. I know it's basically, you know, a shop full of strangers, but they were all women. And I'm sure things like this have happened to the other women that were in the room. Instead of being so freaked out and scared and having to find a quiet way to be able to do this, why couldn't you have just said to the ladies, oh, you're not going to believe what just happened. Everybody get a laugh and then you'd hook it up.
Frankenberry. Have you met me?
What? I didn't catch that.
Have you met me? Do you think for 1 minute that Jonna Spillbore would, in a room full of strangers, announce that her are untethered beneath her flimsy t-shirt like a wacko. No.
Like a wacko.
I'll just like shimmy and shake. And that girl across you must have been like, what is wrong with her?
Exactly. I'm just going to look like there's something seriously up with this woman across from me, as opposed to just laughing about it, saying, oh, you're not going to believe what happened.
It is so insane. But now you don't understand. Now, here's the bigger problem, really. I now have PTSD. Like, how am I going to enjoy a massage chair on my next pedicure?
Carol. Okay. All right. So you run a lot. You exercise a lot. You must have some workout gear, which includes a sports bra.
Whoa, dang.
You're welcome.
Dang.
That ain't coming off.
That's true. That's good a great point. But now what if I want to go straight from work? And now
it's
I have
never
to
gonna happen again. You're gonna have to that's your hit, that's in the past. You're done with that.
That's it. Now I have to go.
Unless you get changed at work and then go.
How do people, let me ask you this. This is a little bit of a separate question, but related, because I know people. I know people in this day and age who do this. Some women choose to, you know, not wear one at all.
Okay.
During the day. Like, how do you do that? Like, I was so self-conscious, you guys. Like, seriously. Like, how do you just not? I would love to. This is why I wish we could take calls. I would love to hear from women who get up in the morning and consciously say, I'm unleashing the beasts. I'm letting the girls roam free. I'm not going to be constrained by a, 36B. I'm just not going to do it. And then do it with confidence. Like,
I don't know anybody who does that. Do you know people who go braless?
I know two people
at work.
You know, no one.
Do it at work. Frankie Berry, maybe Jonna can introduce you.
and just so I can say that, oh yes, I know those two women that are friends with Jonna.
But and then, one does it no matter what. And I know that she has a job. And the other one is maybe a little older and just doesn't, care, what anybody thinks, which there's something to be said for that.
Right.
There really is something to be said for that. I just feel more comfortable. Maybe I'm just a little shy that way. I don't know.
I would be shy that way, number one. And number two, the fact is it could get irritating after a little while.
A little movement back and forth. Back and forth.
Like Frankenberry in his Batman undies?
Those Batman undies are pretty snug. That would be more like Frankenberry in a pair of boxers.
Oh, I thought the Batman undies were boxers.
No. The Batman undies were
briefs.
Yeah, they were tight briefs with the Batman logo right in front.
How did I miss that detail in one of my favorite Frankenberry stories?
I do not know, but no, it would be more the free range comes more from wearing boxer shorts.
Yeah, I don't know how you guys ever do that. Boy. What,
boxers or briefs?
Loose boxers. Like got to get all bunchy and...
Yeah, totally bunchy.
Oh, no, they don't get all bunchy. It's tidy whities that are worrisome.
Really?
Because exactly the word tight. I can't be wearing that.
Oh. Wait a minute. I just learned something new. all my life, all my 39 years on this planet, I thought when people said tidy whities, if I had to spell that, I would have said T-I-D-Y, not T-I-G-H-T-Y.
My God.
Sorry, Jonna, the word tidy is never a word that comes to mind when I think of underwear. Especially white underwear.
Tidy white. Wait. Oh man, this is a second gift you give me in one morning.
Exactly.
Freaking awesome. Tidy. They're so neat. Oh, your whiteies are so neat.
Yes. Do you iron them?
And tidy.
That's what they remind me of, because they're so they're so weird looking. Like they're not boxers, they're not briefs. They're,
Well, they are briefs. I mean, that's...
Did you say diaper?
Diaper.
In shape.
That is a good point. I'll give you that one.
Thank you.
Now, what about, like, the stretchy boxer briefs, Frankenberry, where it goes down your leg a little bit.
Yeah, you know what? Like, I can occasionally wear those, but the problem is the ones that I have now, you know, with a couple of extra, with maybe an extra inch or two around the belly, I can't wear the pairs that I have because they're like, you know, 15 years old.
So, so you're a boxer guy.
Yeah, I'm a boxer guy. Straight up. Okay. That's it.
All right. I'm sorry. I have to rewind.
Yes, Jonna. I said 15 years old. Some of them might even be older.
I knew it.
You have underwears that are...
underwears.
15, possibly 20 years old, Frankenberry?
Yes. I have t-shirts that are also that old.
Well, t-shirts are a different ballgame. Like you could have a concert, like a favorite tee or something like that. Let me just go back to the 15-year-old underwears. Do any of those have holes in them?
A couple of them do, yes. But they're extreme backup underwear. You got to have backups for everything, John.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, I just recently got saved by having a backup computer. You've even got to have backup cats. You know what I'm saying? So you got to have backup stuff. I got backup pirate hats in my car. I got a backup sweatshirt in my car. I got a backup pair of shoes at work. All of it just in case.
Wow. Backup. Well, plan. Then I guess since we're oversharing, I can let you guys in on another something I did that's way out of character for me. Speaking of backups, I was driving to the office the other day, and there was a little news report on the radio that said we are, and this is a public service announcement, it said that we are going to be in for yet another paper product shortage. Not because, you know, last time we were in for one was the beginning of a pandemic. People were racing out and buying all these paper products. But now, apparently, there is a supply chain issue because of a lack of workers, et cetera, which will cause a second paper product supply issue. So yours truly went on the Amazon and bought $500 worth of toilet paper and paper towels.
Seriously?
You hoarder. You're the problem. Oh, and here's the worst part. Two of the three toilets in my house do all that business for you. Like, technically, you don't need toilet paper.
Frankenberry?
Yeah.
Frankenberry?
Yeah.
Come into the kitchen with me for a minute here. You know how you and I have in our refrigerators at home the little man who, when you close the door, he shuts the light off. When you open the door, he turns the light on.
Yes. We've all right? got that little man. Yes. That's what kids. That's what kids are always looking for.
Jonna has a little man in her toilets, and two of them.
Apparently so.
And like, okay, yeah. We're up. Get the scrub brush. Get the hose. And a little mini hose. Clean her up. Get the blow dryer out. Let's dry her off.
And yet she's still going out and buying $500 worth of paper products as a backup.
I panicked.
Yeah, you did.
And you know, Jonna, when Carol said, "Oh my God, you're a hoarder," the first thing I thought of was the TV show and me not being able to get into your house because of all the paper products that are lined up against the walls in the hallway. You know,
it won't be the paper products preventing you from getting to me. It'll be all the as seen on TV contraptions that are lining my hallway.
That is a good point.
But at least, guys, I am prepared to do whatever it takes in the event of a paper product shortage. I will pause right now for applause. Okay, go ahead. Give it to me. Hey!
What? Did we miss something?
I've seen how long I could stay silent. Yeah. All right, so, okay. Jonna, in your priorities, one of the few times in your life, are a little messed up. So if there's going to be a shortage of things you want to buy because mm-hmm. of lack of workers, mm-hmm. that's not going to be exclusive to the paper industry. So why were you not ordering, like, cases of root touch-up hair color, extra makeup, Jimmy Choo shoes?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, come on.
paper?
Well, funny you should ask, because the second thing that I stocked up on, Curly, is a wine. Okay? Because with toilet paper, a girl's not going to need anything else.
All right. I'm feeling a little bit better here. You were starting to scare me a little.
Yeah. No, I'm still me. Okay? I'm still me. Thank you very much. Okay. Now, back to my awesome Sagu. Because I listened to the news and wanted to prepare, I was willing to do whatever it takes.
Boom.
Nice. Drop that mic. Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Now, normally, listen, I pale in comparison to Carol's Sagu's, but I happened to book this guest. So I worked on this. I worked on this because I wanted to make sure I gave her a run for her money. And speaking of runs for your money, I am really looking forward to this because I got to tell you, I am about 80% of the way completed with our next guest's book. And the book is entitled Whatever It Takes, Master the Habits to Transform Your Business, Relationships, and Life. And it's a book by, he's like not just an author, he's a business person, an entrepreneur, a guru, a millionaire a zillion times over. And he's young, guys. I think he started making money in business when he was 18 years old. His name is Brandon Bornison. Now, I may be butchering his last name, but we'll get that figured out when he joins us after the break. And he's going to talk to us about, and this is one heck of a book. It literally is about doing whatever it takes. And he means that in the literal sense. We'll dive into that when we come back from the break with Brian Bornison.
All right. That sounds good.
Wait. Back it up. Frankenberry. Sorry.
Okay. Zip. Go.
We'll dig into that when we come back from the break.
Okay. All right. Well, that's what we have coming up. You're listening to Happy Hour here with Jonna Spilbore and Carol Pesci, and we will be right back with our guest. So please stick around.
Jonna and Carol on K104. It's Happy Hour.
Live better, laugh harder. It's Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol.
And welcome back to Happy Hour here on K104 with Jonna Spilbore and Carol Pesci and myself. And it's time now in our second segment to get to our guest. And our guest today, as you've already been introduced in segment number one, Brandon Bornison. And Jonna, I think you can give us all the details.
Yes. And as I mentioned before the break, I am really excited because Brandon is just an amazing kind of guy. He's a multimillionaire, but he's been a multimillionaire, like not just once. Like most people become a millionaire and then they say that he's been a multimillionaire a couple of times. And let me tell you a little bit about him. Brandon Bornison is a serial salesperson. I love that phrase. Entrepreneur, speaker, author, and strategist who is obsessed with helping people maximize their sales, income, and potential. Throughout his career, he studied the greats and became a top 1% performer and seven-figure earner. Now, Brandon develops sales technologies and strategies to help companies crush sales quotas at thousands of companies spanning Google, eBay, IBM, HP, Amazon, and hundreds of others. You might have heard of those companies. He's written several books, but the one we're going to dig into today is called Whatever It Takes, Master the Habits to Transform Your Business, Relationships, and Life. And let me tell you guys, this book is not for the faint of heart. Brandon, welcome to the show.
Wow. Thank you for having me. First off, I got to get my PR team to optimize that. That is a long intro, but I love it. And super excited to be with all of you today. And thank you, listeners, for tuning in.
So, and thank you. This is really great because I'm going to be honest with you. Now, where are you based out of, Brandon?
I'm based out of Columbus, Ohio and Tampa, Florida.
Nice. So I'm going to guess that you probably haven't listened to Happy Hour with me, Carol. But that's not a bad thing because we have a lot of great author and celebrity guests on. And lately, it seems like the pervasive topic is, you know, how to have more time to relax and how to focus on yourself and
meditate.
And
that goes against everything I believe in.
So when I picked up your book, I'm like, this is amazing. This, because this is not that. So why don't we begin with tell us about the book, who the book is for, how the book came about. Again, we're talking about Whatever It Takes, Master the Habits to Transform Your Business, Relationships, and Life.
Yeah, absolutely. So I wrote Whatever It Takes right when the governor of Ohio, our office was in Columbus, Ohio, is still in Columbus, Ohio. We just opened up multiple offices in Florida and other states. But the governor comes in March, shuts down the entire state. Hey, we're shutting everything down. Everyone go into lockdown. And my wife and I, who run our company with our management team, she's the COO, I'm the CEO. And then we've got incredible VPs, directors. Everyone at the company is just super talented. We knew that we had to tell the entire company, this is going to be a problem. We ran companies during pandemics before. The housing crisis is almost like a financial pandemic, right? My second startup I ran during 2007, 8, and 9, when the mortgage crisis just collapsed the stock market. And I remember how hard it was running a company during that time. So right when the governor of Ohio shut down the state, I wrote for the next 22 days all the principles, all the habits that I believed would help our employees maximize their success, their business, their relationships, their life, knowing that the next 2 years would probably be miserable. And I wanted them to develop the positive, coachable, hardworking, whatever it takes, mentality, mindset, principles to do whatever it takes to thrive and survive during that time. And that's what this book helped achieve, and then decided to publish it to the world. And it became a number one bestseller in 60 minutes. I'm super grateful. It's got hundreds of secrets to help you maximize your success in business, relationships, and life. And, you know, everything that you need right here.
See, now I'm up to chapter 2. I always consume my books in the audio version.
Oh, and, yeah. I love that. Me too. Yeah. I love doing the audio.
And I am up to chapter 10. And I got to tell you, you had me almost immediately with this book because the title really sums it up. Like, you're not just saying, oh, do whatever it takes. And, you know, and that includes sitting cross-legged on the floor, eating ice cream from time to time. You're like, no, this is what you need to do if you want to get from where you are to where you want to be. And it's not for the faint of heart. So were you worried when you wrote the book that some people were almost going to be afraid to follow the principles, for lack of a better word?
Great question. Like, I want to be the person that tells you the hard things that people won't tell you because they're polarizing, yet exactly the fundamental truths that you need to be successful. You know, everyone wants to be a millionaire, but they want to have a $10,000 work ethic, right? So I just threw it all out, you know, being an entrepreneur for 2 decades, being in sales and selling over 100 million, like, and then building a company that went from 0 to 500 million in less than 4 years, I knew it was just like, whether you like me or hate me, I'm going to put everything that I've learned and everything that I follow and the mistakes I made into this book, Whatever It Takes, so that you learn them, all these principles and habits, and you apply them to maximize your success much faster than I ever could. And it was less about worrying about what the masses thought and more worried about, I want to make sure this book wakes you up to realize these are the hard things that you need to do to get to where you want to go, which, you know, the only way to get there is to put in the work and do whatever it takes.
Brandon, this is Carol. So I want to compliment you or just let you know the level of appreciation I have for being so open with all of us through your work, through your book.
Thank you.
We live in a time where things are so filtered. We don't see people's lives. We see the element of their lives they want us to see, right? And then we judge ourselves against what is a filtered standard. And what I think, in addition to everything else that you bring to the table, the fact that you were highly successful and then your next venture, you lost it all.
Lost it all. Stole food to eat. Girlfriend, who's now my wife, was buying me food because I was dead broke. You know, living, sleeping in my office at the time. You know, you got to be kind of smart and stupid to generate millions with one company and then lose it all with the next company. But I was super grateful. Like, one of the things that I teach in Whatever It Takes is the reason why my second company failed was because I didn't have the list. that I need to sell to, which is ironic because now I built Seamless, which gives you all the lists and leads that you need to sell to. And I didn't do whatever it takes. And I also wasn't positive and coachable, mainly coachable. I got super successful at 18, 19, 20 years old. That made me uncoachable. That made me egotistical. That made me not listen to mentors, people that were smarter than me when they would give me advice and I wouldn't apply the advice or try to learn from others because I thought I had all the answers. And luckily I got knocked out in the ring of hard knock life, entrepreneurship, sales, marketing success, right? And then that taught me like whatever I think I know, I don't know anything. And getting humbled through experience and through those mistakes allowed me to just completely open up. And again, another principle is like, don't judge anyone. Don't worry about like other people can have success and you could have success. Your success isn't dependent on them being successful or failing. You know, just all of these principles and habits that I've learned are in the book. And I share this stuff because I want people to realize like came from nothing, achieved success, lost it all, then achieved it again. I still don't think I'm successful, right? Because my bar is set so high. Like I'm looking at the billionaires and the people that have transformed industries like Jeff Bezos, Mark Zuckerberg, you know, Richard Branson, freaking Berkshire Hathaway, you know, Warren Buffett, Bill Gates, you name it. So I'm not even where I need to go and where I need to get to. And I've got such a long way to go, but I'll do whatever it takes every day to get there.
Well, clear. You walk the walk of what you tell other people. So you had it all, you lost it all, you built it back up. I think you're going to hang on to it this time because of all the things that you just said. But as tough as that was, and there's another valuable lesson you have to share by who you are and what you share, is as tough as the things that we go through are sometimes, look how better equipped you are standing here today because of that failure. And yeah. How much better you can guide people because of what you went through.
Yeah, I think another habit principle in the book, you can't play the victim game. Like nope. There are zero victims allowed in my circle, in my network, at my company, anyone that I talk to. Wherever we're at in this life is because of us, not because your mom or your dad or your grandma, or because you grew up in the ghetto of Cleveland like I did and was using food stamps at the babysitter to go eat lunch every day. Like that stuff, I don't use as victim. I use that as like, how can I learn from that, right? So I think ever since I was a kid, anything challenging that I experienced, I appreciated because I was like, I'm going to learn from this and I'm going to wish I was never there. And I'm going to try to learn everything I can to get out of that situation to move to the next situation that I want to get to. So I think growing up poor as a kid to then like building a company that was successful, then losing it all. I never look back, you know, at InMobile, the company that I ran that failed at 21, 22, 23 and cry about it every day. I'm like, okay, what were the mistakes that I made there? Not blaming anyone else.
Yeah.
I don't blame the economy that it was 2007, 8, 9 financial mortgage crisis, fit my family who did well, went bankrupt finally because of all the money in the real estate. Like my family went through bankrupt. My company was going through bankrupt. I had to steal food to eat. I look at those experiences and I'm like, okay, where did I screw up? Okay, I didn't have the sales list. I wasn't coachable. I wasn't doing whatever it takes. I was focused on the wrong things to get to where I needed to go. I wasn't around the right people, the right mentors, you name it. Okay, boom, the next deal I do, whether it's working for someone else or my own company, I'm going to apply those learnings to get better. And then when I was selling for IBM, I learned all these good things and bad things and opportunities for improvement. And then boom, I sell for Google. You know, and you just take everything that you learn throughout your life to propel forward. You can either move backwards or you can move forwards. I don't believe there's an intermittent state. Like you're either moving forwards or you're moving backwards. I try to take everything and move.
You know what's interesting? Because even though nobody wants to go bankrupt, right? Nobody wants to lose millions and millions of dollars. But one of the things that you can walk the walk about now is that once you've built a million-dollar company, for example, and then you go bankrupt, you kind of have the blueprint to do it again. And that's encouraging for people who do lose things for whatever reason, whether it's outside influences, inside influences, once you know how to do it, you can do it again. And I think that's a very valuable lesson in loss that you have and that a lot of people can have.
Yeah. And I probably learned it just from a lot with either entrepreneurship or sales. Like when I was fundraising for Seamless.ai, my company, no one would touch it with a 10-foot pole. Sales leads, no one needs sales leads. No one needs contact info, emails and phone numbers for everyone that you need to sell to. I pitched 347 VCs. And because like I became a millionaire using my software, selling for Google and IBM, I didn't quit my job, full-time job. I took millions of dollars to bootstrap the company. I was like my own VC. And my money kept us afloat for like the first few years while we were building the platform. But then my money ran out, like, because you're hiring all these engineers to build the company or whatever. So I literally like sold everything, you know, had a Nissan Maxima and I had a folding desk and I would drive the country in my Nissan Maxima and folding desk and chair. And I'd go pitch all these VCs. Throughout 2 years, 347 of them I pitched, 297 venture capitalists said no. And then I finally was able to raise a few million dollars. And then we launched the product. And then it went from zero to millions, millions to tens of millions. And now the company is worth, you know, over 500 million valuation in 4 years. Like it's just Einstein talks about like, or Thomas Edison, you know, hey, I didn't fail 10,000 times. I just learned what not to do the 10,000th and one time, right? Every time you fail, it's like a new data point to do it better, smarter in the future. So you just got to keep trying and trying and trying. The only person that fails is the person that quits trying. And every time you try, you learn something new or different to try to do it better, smarter the next time. So for the audience tuning in, anything in life that you want to do, don't give up. Just keep going.
Brandon, where do you think you get your drive from? Inherent in your nature?
No, look, I mean, like I get it from a few experiences, right? Like growing up poor at that babysitter with 30 kids, taking the food stamp, getting a salami club sandwich wrapped with a milk carton using food stamps. Like I remember that. Like I'll never forget that stuff like in the ghetto of Cleveland. Getting made fun of because all my clothes were garage sale. My food was out of a can from Marks. Marks was like the cheapest grocery store. They didn't accept credit cards, you name it. My mom would take me garage sale shopping like every Thursday and Saturday when she wasn't working at the bank or the grocery store to get all of our clothes. Like you just don't forget not having anything that all the other kids had, being made fun of because you got oversized clothes and hand-me-downs. And then also like the experiences, right? Like luckily went to college and then like my second company failing, that drives motivation. My first company being super successful. I always wanted a better life. And I just would always try to do whatever it takes to create a better life, to achieve financial freedom because I saw how life was bad. And I just was willing to do whatever it takes to not live that bad life anymore. And I think that's where a lot of my motivation came from. And I just always believed like I had so much potential. And I this fear of dying on my deathbed, not maximizing my true potential, that's a lot of my motivation. So it's like big goals and aspirations tied with really bad experiences growing up combined allow me to just want to work 7 days a week to achieve things that like I'm probably not even thinking I should be trying to achieve.
Or really overall to avoid pain, right? When the pain's big enough and you want to avoid it, that sometimes can be a very good motivating factor. And I know that we have to wind up here soon, but there's something I've been dying to ask you. And a lot of entrepreneurs in your shoes, you credit and you give kudos to, you have a tremendous team.
Oh, yeah.
And you guys are all, you're all on the same page.
Couldn't do it without the team, for sure.
I'm surmising, and I very well could be wrong, you know, you're probably earning far more than the majority of your team, which is not uncommon. And I'm just wondering, how do you, generally speaking, how do you motivate your team to hang on to all your values and to work as hard as they work for you? How do you do that? How do you do that if they're not making the same money?
Well, great question. So first off, for years, I paid everyone but myself. So I went from making $1 million to paying myself $0 for 365 days. The next 365 days, $0. Third year, I paid myself 35 grand. Like it was like $36,000. Like, could you imagine? This is doing whatever it takes, by the way. Working nearly 3 years and only making $36,000. First 2 years making zero. So my motivation was always in helping the world connect opportunity and positively impact billions and do whatever it takes to make that happen. So like then over time, when you finally start generating a lot of money, you could start finally paying yourself. But right now I could quit, sell the company and be worth over $100 million today. Like it's in my best interest, honestly, to not work 7 days a week and shut down the company. But that's not like what motivates. What motivates me and our leadership team is to positively impact a billion people and help the world connect to opportunity. I wake up every day, and so does our leadership team and our management team. We want to help our employees achieve financial freedom. We want to help our users achieve financial freedom. And we know the only way to do that is with our software. We know that if we take our software company public, it will help all of our employees achieve financial freedom. You look at the first 1,000 employees at Salesforce, they're all multimillionaires, right? Like, so my goal is for everyone to be on this rocket ship, to reward and incentivize in cash, in bonuses, in commissions, in equity, all of our employees. Yeah, that's why we unleashed an equity for all program and then IPO and then keep going to like, you know, we want to build a company larger than Salesforce, larger than Amazon. Like I've already achieved financial freedom. I could quit tomorrow. It's not about the money. The money gets boring. It's about the challenge. It's about self-development. It's about changing people's lives. That will motivate and inspire you forever. And I think my employees know that I've always been all in on our team, on our users, on our customers to maximize their success and do whatever it takes to make that happen. And because of that, like, because I'm not clocking in 4 hours a day, 6 hours a day, I'm clocking in 18 hours a day. I'm working 7 days a week. I try to work harder than any single person at the company just because that's just what I do. They see that and they're inspired by it and they're motivated by it. And they know, hey, we're on this mission to help the world connect opportunity to positively impact billions. If we stay on this mission and do whatever it takes to make that happen, we will all achieve success, financial freedom, and everything that we want in this life. The life you want, the family you want, everything you want in this life is just one list away. The only way to build the list is with seamless.ai, and they're all in on that.
And that's awesome and inspiring. And I have to tell, I know that we're running out of time. This was a very quick interview. It feels like I have to remind everybody that if you want to be inspired, and I'm talking to people who are listening to us who don't know why they can't get to where they want to be, this is an option that you should explore. Pick up the book by Brandon I almost said Bordanson because off the air, that's how we were pronouncing the name. But it's Brandon Bordanson, the author of Whatever It Takes, Master the Habits to Transform Your Business, Relationships, and Life. It is really eye-opening. It's hard-hitting. You got to be open to the concepts. And it, above all, it's really inspiring. Like I'm listening to it every minute that I absolutely can because I'm loving it. And I really appreciate you coming on and sharing your story and your philosophies with us this morning on Happy Hour.
Thank you so much, ladies. I truly appreciate it. And a closed mind and a closed mouth never gets fed. You know, I think the team here said it best, right? Jonah said it best, like you got to have an open mind. Listen to these principles and habits and apply them. Like don't be closed-minded, just listen to them, apply them. There are people out there that I've learned these habits from or that I've learned on my own who are billionaires, millionaires, the most successful entrepreneurs in the world. Take them, apply them, and maximize your potential.
Yeah, well said. And I guarantee you, if one person applies one of your principles, just one, they will see a result. I can almost promise you that you will see a result. Like you can't not. So it's an excellent read and you're just a phenomenal person. And thank you for sharing your insights. And we hope to have you on again in the future. Thank you very much, Brandon.
Thank you so much. Would love to connect with you all. Feel free to hit me up on LinkedIn or YouTube, Brandon Bordanson, or feel free to get my daily newsletter at seamless.ai. You can join for free. Look forward to it, everyone. Thank you.
That's all right. Great. Brandon, thank you for the time. We most appreciate it. And Jonna, Carol, well, still got a segment to finish here. But Brandon, again, thank you very much. And we'll be right back with segment number three. This is Happy Hour with Jonna Spilbor and Carol Pesci. And stick around.
Jonna and Carol on K104. It's Happy Hour.
Laugh more, stress less. It's Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol.
And back again, we are one more time here with Happy Hour, Jonna Spilbor and Carol Pesci. Hello, ladies.
Hello.
Frankenberry.
Boom.
No boom.
No, there's no boom on that. Carol's right. No boom.
No.
We don't go boom.
You nailed this ago. The chorus, Hello, Frankenberry. No.
And but
I was right on time.
I also know the Carol version of, hey, don't forget about that.
Yeah, there is that. You did do a fine impersonation of Carol's hey. Yes.
True. So yes. There. We'll give you that.
It'll be nice today when we're all back in the studio together, because then we'll have it perfect every time, if that ever happens.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah, we have to wait and see on that.
So Brandon was awesome.
Yes. And, you know, one of the things I was really, you know, wanting to talk to him about is he, you know, is... In case you haven't figured that out, I don't want to call him an anti-guru, but we have a lot of guests, especially of late, who want to talk about work-life balance and taking the time. And, you know, it's okay to be lazy, for example, or, you know, you need time to recharge your battery so that you can. And I get all of that. But he has mastered how to become a human machine. And I think that's going to appeal to some people. And some people might think, wow, this would be really hard. But there's no doubt in my mind that if you do what he says you need to do, you're going to have success. It's just not, I mean, look, it's not easy. That's why hard work is
right.
Hard work. So,
well, and I love listening to someone like him who created what he had, right? It wasn't, I mean, he talks about this in the book, the success of his father and growing up, he did well and how, but he built his own businesses, one hugely successful. The second one undid everything the first time around and then kept going back at it. And he found the formula, you know, it's really flipping a switch and just, it's a singular decision, right? I'm going to do whatever it takes.
I think you can even apply basically these principles. Now, let's say you're not prepared to dive completely all in to the exclusion of everything else in your life, right? To focus on. I think you can do many versions of this and you could take one tiny aspect and just tweak one thing in your life and like make that your focus in that one little area and get a positive result or, you know, have success in that area. And then maybe you do that over and over again. Maybe that's another way. You can apply these principles, and that might like bite size, and that might be more manageable,
right? And you know whose story he reminds me of? Not story, well, sort of his philosophy. Jamie Kern Lima, the founder of IT Cosmetics. I feel like that was her business model too. Do whatever it takes, and would she sell her a billion? I think she sold IT Cosmetics for.
I think it was. I thought it was even more than that.
Yeah.
And whatever it was a really big freaking number.
Yeah, well, exactly, Frankenberry. Thank you for clearing that up.
And you know what? You just raised a really good point, and you just reminded me of something. Because so Jamie Kern Lima. She made all this money, and she didn't stop. Like a lot of people say, if I won the lottery, I'd retire. She made all this money and she keeps at it. This guy, Brandon, he's made all this money and he keeps at it. You know, he keeps wanting to improve and do well for his customers and his clients and his people and his tribe. And that to me is really admirable. I mean, that's drive. Because a lot of people wouldn't. A lot of people would be sipping a margarita, you know, putting their feet up, toes in the sand. And I might be one of those people.
Hey,
I'll have to let you know when I get there. But to me, that's really dedication. And that's really about another thing that he talked about was, you know, you've got to have kind of we've talked about this, a why, a reason, something that keeps you going. And so, you know, you never stop until you're pushing up daisies, I suppose. But
there's so much of it is really just the mental game. Right. And the commitments you make, the decisions you make, and the mental game you got going on in your head. And he kind of helps clear the way of the fog and like, this is it. This is what you got to do.
There's no doubt that it works, but it's, it would definitely be a challenge, but there's something to be said. So this really interesting book, like I said, I'm almost through it. I encourage anybody. It's just another way to look at things. If you're not exactly where you want to be, this is another great avenue to explore to give you options on how you get from where you are to where you want to be.
Well, and the fact is, if you're not where you want to be right now, you got to change something you're doing. You got to change how you're thinking. You got to change what you're doing. And the best way to do that is follow someone who's already done it.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah, good point.
Exactly. And hey, Jonah, maybe you should pitch a business idea to him, like a bra that will not unhook at the nail salon.
We are going to invent that ourselves. Added to the list of all the million dollar ideas we've had over the years.
And then what I'll do is I'll approach him on the side, and guy to guy, I'll say to him, hey, we need to investigate the chair. There might be something in that.
Maybe you can learn something.
Maybe I could. Well, I think we are in good shape here, ladies and audience. Thank you very much to Brandon for joining us today, and for Jonas Philbor and Carol Pesci. I'm Frank Inberry. You all have yourselves a fine rest of the day and a safe week. We'll talk to you next Sunday.
You've been listening to Happy Hour with Jonas Philbor and Carol Pesci. More life advice, real conversation, and another awesome interview comes your way next Sunday at 7 a.m. to help you live better, stress less, and laugh more. Until then, catch this week's show and others at the Happy Hour link on K104Online.com.